Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Greg Jefferson, Metro editor.
Nancy Pereira Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
Well, as you all know, we had a primary election here in Texas a couple of weeks ago, and we've got a runoff happening on May 28th. And I think one of the biggest runoffs for San Antonians and for people across the state involves U.S. District 23, the congressional seat held by Tony Gonzalez. And we've got a Republican runoff involving Tony Gonzalez and his challenger, Brandon Nereda, who is a YouTube celebrity, I guess you'd say, and a gun activist who calls himself the AK guy. And before we get going, I wanted to mention that we have extended an invitation to Brandon to be on the podcast sometime between now and the May 28th runoff. But today we're really happy to have Congressman Tony Gonzalez joining us. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Gilbert. Thanks for having me back on. It'll be a lot of fun.
You got a lot of eyes really across the country on this race. I mean, the night of the primary, that you had national news outlets talking about this race. You had four challengers. And you came pretty close to reaching the majority that you needed to win it outright. But did anything surprise you about how the primary went?
So first, this is the toughest district in America, no doubt. It's larger than 30 states. I really represent four different types of people. And we've had crises after crises, right? From year one of the border crisis to the Uvalde, to the worst school shooting in Texas history, to year three of the border crisis. And it hasn't stopped. And so first off, you're starting there. A lot of people are angry. They're upset with just the way things are. Mm-hmm. The positive out of it is I won all 29 counties. And we'll win all 29 counties again. We just got to do it with a larger margin. Runoffs, the other positive is I know what it takes to win a runoff. Runoffs are tough. It's brutal. It's 0-0. The score is 0-0. And you got to work your guts out and you got to go out. So in one side, hey, I won all the counties. That's great. The other side tells me I need to listen to people a little bit more, right? And so there is an opportunity to get stronger out of this if you're willing to put in the work and going to listen to folks and to go, well, why, you know, what do I have to do in order to earn your vote and earn your trust? Half of the battle, though, is fighting against misinformation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the other side does when they don't have a platform. I have a platform. My platform is clear. What I've been able to produce for our community is very clear. The other side often, they just run the anti-Tony, and that's what we're up against.
Now, Brandon Nereda is an unusual candidate. We were talking before the podcast. You mentioned that the two of you haven't met at all. He's has no political experience.
He has a whole lot more hair than I do.
That goes double for me, but you know, he's got a lot of social media followers, but he has no political experience. He kind of limits the in situations in which he is accessible, I guess, to the media. When asked, he will talk about other issues, but it seems like so much of his focus is on guns. I think it's fair to say he's not just somebody who is a supporter of the right to bear arms, but he kind of celebrates guns. He's done videos where he shows himself and, you know, others like firing weapons and so on. What do you make of this candidate? Because this is a different kind of candidate than you've encountered before.
I mean, the contrast is night and day difference. I mean, one, I grew up here. I enlisted from the Navy office across from Ingram Park Mall. You know, I grew up in Camp Wood. I grew up in Devine. I live here. I'm raising my children. My children go to school here. I retired out of here. My coworkers that I used to work with, they live in the district. I mean, I'm connected in so many different ways. These communities, which, oh, by the way, is 119 different cities and towns. Mm-hmm. I know them. This is an example. I started off the morning. I dropped my kids off at school. I got a standing rule. Anytime I'm home, I drop the kids off at school. I immediately went to Castroville. We did a roundtable with some community leaders there, came back here. I'll do the podcast from here. I'll go to Del Rio. We'll do a roundtable with the judge, the mayor, the base commander at Laughlin Air Force Base, all these different local leaders there. Then I'll go to Uvalde. I'll do another roundtable, judge, mayor, superintendent, chamber of commerce, local leaders there. And then I'll get home about 7:30 or 8 o'clock tonight. Welcome to the 23rd district, right? If you're willing to do that, you want to put the work in, you want to listen to people, you're willing to do that. On the other end, you got a guy who's not from here. I believe this is the first time he's ever voted in Texas. He's from North Carolina. It's very clear. He runs a very radical kind of approach to it. You watch his videos, they're kind of pretending to be a Nazi. I mean, that offends me in so many different ways. But my grandfather was got drafted in World War II, mm-hmm. went off, fought in this country, came back, got a job at Kelly Air Force Base, raised seven beautiful children, rose us from poverty into the middle class, and now he's buried at Fort Sam Houston. Guess what that story sounds a whole lot like? A lot of people from San Antonio. Brandon Herrera is much different than that. And the other thing too is he's not even a MAGA person. Everyone kind of tries to, mm-hmm. he's not. He's on record saying Donald Trump can't win the election. He's on Trump.
He did say that.
I mean, what the heck? He's like the only.
It was a few months ago, but still, yeah.
A few months ago, he said Donald Trump can win the election.
Yeah.
Brandon Herrera is on record making fun of Donald Trump's son, not Don Jr., not Ivanka, Barron. Who the heck makes fun of a kid, right? And so he's just way out there, really extreme, and I just don't think he's a very good fit for this district.
But what does it tell you about the state of the Republican Party in Texas that you wind up in a runoff with this guy?
You know, it didn't surprise me. I mean, things don't happen by accident, if you will, right? I mean, having four people in the runoff, having the amount of money that was dumped in, none of them really ran their platform. Everybody was an anti-Tony platform type of approach. You could see this kind of coming, if you will. And we've always planned for that. And like I said, you can get stronger in runoffs. I've done it. I've gotten stronger in runoffs. But it tells you people are mad and they're upset for a reason. I mean, people are angry out there with the border crisis, with the cost of goods, just so many different things. And it's easy to tap into them with some phrase. But I think we got to do a better job of kind of highlighting all the things we've done for the district.
Right. You said you represent four different types of people. Can you describe them and how you plan to appeal to them?
Yeah, I think, you know, here in San Antonio, you have a lot of the suburbs. You got kind of middle of the road people, I would say, you know, they live in the city, but they're conservative in their values. Their family's very important to them. Then you've got border communities like Eagle Pass and Del Rio that feel very alone. Like they're on their own, Presidio, like you're way out there. You have to fend for yourself. Trade and commerce is very important to them, but they're at the very front of the border crisis and they're feeling it every day. You've got El Paso, the suburbs of El Paso, very different people, you know, a much more progressive kind of outlook on things. But once again, they've got their conservative values, but then it's a very blue city, if you will. And then you've got out in West Texas where they're getting their livelihood through oil and gas. That's important. So people are kind of getting their livelihoods in different ways, right? Some may be agriculture, some may be defense or related to the bases. Mm-hmm. I represent Lackland here in San Antonio, Laughlin out in the district. It's just very different people kind of seeing life differently.
From what I can see, Brandon Adetta's critique of you has focused on three issues. And I wanted to give you a chance to go and talk about some of these things. One is he was critical of you, being the guns are a big issue for him. He's critical of your support for the Safer Communities Act, which you supported in response to the Uvalde school shooting of 2022.
Sure.
He has criticized you for your opposition to a bill, which I think came from Chip Roy, which I think you believed was going to really completely block the asylum process. And I don't think that bill really went anywhere. And then the third thing was early in your time in Congress in 2021, you voted in favor of what would have been a bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. So if you wouldn't mind, I mean, go just piece by piece
That's through great.
That, because I think those are the things that he really talks about the most.
And this is what the other side does, is they mix truth with lies and they kind of blend it in. So let's start with the January 6th stuff. I actually voted against the January 6th commission that ultimately got passed. I voted against that twice. I voted in favor of a bipartisan commission that would have prevented what I thought the January 6th commission went down, a more partisan route. So you take a vote that I voted, you know, in a different manner and you switch it, you confuse people. So the so to be clear, the January 6th commission that ultimately got passed and Nancy Pelosi ran, I voted against. I was very adamant against that. So you see how that's basically a lie. Like his, what he's put on has been a lie. The Safest Community Act. I've been very pro Constitution before and pro Constitution throughout my entire period in Congress. I've not swayed from that at all. And some of the things that I voted against was assault weapons ban. And guess what? I've gotten a lot of flack on that from a different side, right? Yeah. I voted against raising the age limit from 18 to 21. Guess what? I've gotten a lot of flack on the other side. I voted against universal background checks. So but what the Safest Community Act was, it allowed more money for mental health resources, which everyone talks about, but nobody ultimately delivers. And then the other piece of it too was it gave background checks for minors. I'm okay with that. I'm of the mindset, no one, if you're crazy, you should not have access to go kill innocent people. And if you ask people across the spectrum, gun owners, manufacturers, they'll tell you too. They go, Tony, we don't want to sell guns to people who are then going to go kill kids. And so I've been trying to navigate a route that goes, we can protect the Constitution and we can protect our kids. It's not either or. And then the border situation. Yeah. No, Gilbert, nobody knew where Eagle Pass was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Nobody knew where Del Rio was and some of these areas. I was the first member when there were Haitians under a bridge in Del Rio. I was the first member December 20th when there were thousands of Venezuelans under the bridge in Eagle Pass. I've hosted over 200 members of Congress. I've hosted Elon Musk. I've hosted, you name it. I've brought attention to this. If you ask my colleagues, there's a reason why Speaker Johnson and Leader Scalise and Whip Emmer and Conference Chair Stefanik are all endorsing us. Dan Patrick has endorsed us. Is because I've been very firm on the border. Now, he took one thing, a letter. Basically, this is what happens in Congress. Everybody writes these letters, right? Nobody reads these letters, and these letters go immediately. You think Joe Biden is reading a letter from what some House Republican wrote and go, oh, let's see what, you know, so-and-so has to say on how I should secure the border. It's all politics. And this is where I'd say probably an area that I need to improve, but maybe I don't want to improve, is the politics part of it. Because that's like the BS part of it. That's not real. That letter has no chance of going anywhere. But I'll tell you this, I've adapted. I got a letter guy now. Every letter that gets put on, hey, get us on that letter, right? So the stronger the worded, the letter, the better. So you see how you can kind of take half-truths and spin them into things. But what is true is the fact that this guy is over here supporting very radical positions. He's talked about how Donald Trump can't win the election. He's talked about Donald Trump's son. And then when he got called out on it, what does he do? He doubles down. He goes on Glenn Beck's show and he goes, Trump messed up a lot of things. Trump wasn't strong enough on guns. Mm. This guy is over here attacking Trump on some of these things. So it's not just me.
One thing I've been curious about is I think it was last September when then Speaker Kevin McCarthy announced that he was opening an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. You were quoted as saying, I think we should have impeached his ass a long time ago.
Sure.
And I was curious what, and I know the issues you had with him on the border, handling of the border, but what basis did you see for impeachment, which is a serious process?
You know, there was a moment that just kind of, I guess I've had enough where I've tried, I kind of just have gone, I've tried everything and I've just had enough. Mm-hmm. One, it's when the Tambunga family was killed. And that's the mother, the grandmother, and the 7-year-old daughter that were on the in Ozona, Texas, about 100 miles from the border, about 2.5 hours from here. There were after a play date, we're going home. A smuggler going 100 miles an hour piles into their car and kills them. And having to sit down with that family. That's the other part. I've had to sit down with so many families that have lost loved ones. You know how difficult that is? There is nothing you can do for that family. Mm-hmm. There is nothing you can do to bring their child or their mother or whoever they lost back. But you have to be there and you have to kind of, you have to find a way to help bring some closure into their life. And so that was the moment to me where it was going, here's the deal. There are real people that are dying. And there were other moments too. You know, there's a National Guardsman, Sergeant Evans, that drowned when he dived into the river and tried to save a couple of people. He drowned. These people that have come over illegally, they're drowning every day. They don't have names. They don't have faces, but but the Tambunga issue is, I think, is when it just came to a halt.
But I mean, what, just in terms of President Biden, what exactly is the impeachable offense that you saw? Like, what was it?
It's getting Americans killed. Mm-hmm. That's where I see. I see this border crisis has boiled up.
Is it dereliction of duty or like, what is it?
I'm no lawyer. And you know what I mean? And I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't try to be a lawyer. I don't pretend to be a lawyer. Uh-huh. I know the House is going through the impeachment process and they're going to kind of go through that. But in my eyes, in layman's terms, mm-hmm. it was getting Americans killed due to his inact of the border.
Well, wasn't that already happening with Trump during that time? I mean, smugglers were coming across. Wasn't it just as bad when Trump was in office?
It was not as bad, not even close to as bad. I mean, think back to, you know, all the people that have been killed since Joe Biden has taken. I'm talking Americans that have had their lives lost. Mm-hmm. Those are now we're talking extremes. Now, how many people have had their lives changed? There is not one person in my district that has not had their life changed in the last 3 years in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And this is where the anger stems from. So this isn't a, oh, hey, I got it wrong. It is a failed policy that has been turned into Americans dying.
It, from what I can tell, your opponent seems reluctant to put more U.S. funding into supporting Ukraine, which is trying to defend itself from an invasion launched by Vladimir Putin in Russia. And I want to get your position on that. I mean, actually, in hearing him talk about it, I felt he was kind of on the fence a little bit. It seemed like he was reluctant to put more money into that. What's your take on that?
Brandon Herrera is fascinated with burning the place down. He loves the problem. He loves to identify the problem. He loves to talk about the problem. Guess what? That's a lot of people in Congress that they only talk about the problem. They only highlight what's wrong. I think most Americans, we know what the problem is. I don't need you to reiterate the problem to me. I need you to solve the problem or stop being the problem in some cases. When it comes to Ukraine or any ally, whether it's Israel, whether it's Taiwan, whether it's South Korea, whether it's the UK, Australia, doesn't matter. I'm of the mindset you cannot leave an ally to bleed out on the battlefield, period. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have abandoned Afghanistan. We shouldn't abandon Iraq. I mean, we should stand firm with our allies. I'm also understand Americans feel as if they're put last in this equation. Mm-hmm. That's why they're angry. They're going, wait a second here. I'm paying my taxes. I'm following the rules. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do. And somehow I'm last in this equation. Somehow my kids aren't safe in school. Somehow I can't afford to buy a house. I have to live in an apartment or I have to live with my parents or I can't sell a house. Like things aren't matching up. So I'm of the mindset you can take care of both. It doesn't have to be either or. And I think he's of the mindset of something different.
Last week, you were part of a bipartisan majority voting for a bill that would force the sale of TikTok from its Chinese parent company, ByteDance. It essentially either forced that sale or I think effectively banned TikTok in the United States. I hadn't had a chance to talk with you about your position on this. I mean, it's you know, this is a very popular app and platform. for people, especially young people in this country.
Check. Do you have a TikTok?
I don't.
Okay.
Interesting.
No.
I hadn't thought
your campaign
that.
Doesn't have a
TikTok. No.
And I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate. Joe Biden has said that he would sign it if it reaches his desk. What was your thinking in voting for this?
You know, it's been kind of frustrating, and I've only been in Congress 3 years, but I serve with people that I firmly believe do not have America's best interests at heart. I mean, that's a bold statement to make, but I serve with people that do not have America's best interests at heart. And so when I think of something like TikTok, going back to my background, 20 years in the military, having fought against China and Russia and Iran and people that hate us, not because we're Democrats or Republicans, because of what we stand for. I know the threats. I know exactly the threats. And China is an absolute threat to the United States. And them utilizing TikTok is a function of their soft power, if you will. And so, you know, banning a application may seem extreme. You know, it kind of goes against the whole free enterprise. Let it all kind of shake out. But something has to change, because I firmly believe China is poisoning our kids with fentanyl. This is a coordinated effort that they're working with the cartels in order to poison and kill our kids with fentanyl. And they're poisoning our kids' minds with TikTok. And so we have to do something. There has to be a line in the sand.
So if I understand this, your concern is not just about the possible privacy breaches, security breaches involving the Chinese government, but you think that it's just the platform itself is damaging to the minds of young people.
How does it poison minds?
It poisons. This is information, the way people consume information is much different now. We're seeing it, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, I mean, it's no longer newspapers primarily, and you know, the main three stations, right? Mm-hmm. They're getting their information through all these other different outlets where there is really no checks and balances. There's no guardrails. There's no standards. You may not agree with everything the San Antonio Express News puts out, but there is a process. There's an editorial process. There is some sense of real journalism there, mm-hmm. right? You can argue it all day long and be against it, but there is some sense. Some of these outlets like TikTok, they're doing none of that. They're clipping something and they're changing the narrative through small bits of information.
But do you have the same concerns about X or Facebook?
All these platforms are changing the way people consume information. Why do you think everyone's trying to, if you control information, you control what people consume. Mm-hmm. So this is where I think it's important, where we have to understand who are the people that are going against us and why. Why are they trying to change our minds? Why are they trying to change? Why are they trying to incite us to be against our government and to be against one another? I've always been a firm believer that you can never beat the United States going head up. China, Russia, none of these actors could ever beat us going head up. We're too resilient of a people. We've shown that with every war that we've fought in. And we're a violent society. Like, we will go to your country. We will overthrow your government. We've proven that, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you defeat us? You defeat us through the inside out, and you defeat us by corrupting our children. Like, you start there, and then all of a sudden our children are going against it. So I think we got pretty deep there.
Yeah.
But I think it's a much deeper play than just a platform being banned and picking the winners and losers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I know that when you're talking about X or Instagram or Facebook, you don't have the factor of the Chinese, the possible influence of the Chinese government. But as far as the way people are processing information, and I would think the effects that it has on people's consciousness, it's probably similar to what TikTok does. I mean, it's different. I understand, but there are similarities, and I just wonder: is this a slippery slope, or where we're going to start potentially targeting others and other platforms?
I mean, just think back to this race. I mean, I'm basically going up against a social media guy. Yeah. Like, never. That's right. His whole job, like, he's pretending to be a Nazi and sending that out to people and getting it for likes and shares. Like, the more extreme and radical you can be, the more you have somebody willing to click on it and watch it. Right. Mm-hmm. And that just goes against everything I'm for. Like, I am a I served in the military. It's about the community. It's about protecting our kids. Or what about our healthcare and education and our roads? And I think that form of government is far more important than just this radical extremism that's all about clicks and likes and shares.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that just like TikTok is kind of a corrupting influence on kids, X could be a corrupting influence on adults and kind of the body politic. Is that what you're saying?
I think all these different social media platforms offer a different way where people can consume their information. Yeah. And whoever controls that can control what they get or what they don't get, maybe left-leaning, right-leaning. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that we have to be aware of. And we have to like tell our kids, like teach them. They're growing up in a much different era than we are, where they're consuming way different more information, different information. And also that information may not be credible, right? Mm-hmm. There is no editorial vetting process. It's just some random video that's kind of funny, but is it funny? I mean, is it funny to dress up as a Nazi? Is it funny to talk about, you know, some of these things? No, there's nothing fun to me. There's nothing funny about that. Is it funny, you know, Brandon Herrera talking about, laughing about veteran suicide and claiming he's an honorary veteran? There's nothing funny about that. There's no such thing as an honorary veteran. I mean, the guy's a perfectly healthy, hairy, man, right? Why didn't he join the service?
He's hairy. You're right.
He's very hairy.
People take nothing else away from this podcast, they're going to know he's a hairy guy.
Harry Herrera. Harry Herrera.
I think that's what the
your next ad, I think.
Teachers and classrooms, like, they need to do a better job at teaching students to vet this out and to know the difference and to kind of separate it, because I don't think anything can be done at the social media platform.
That's area. The tough part is, I mean, here you have the teachers, the superintendent. I'm going to meet with the superintendent of Uvalde. And I met with her. I saw your article. Yeah. I met with her 2 weeks ago and I go, you're wearing a dozen hats. And so now, as a teacher, you're wearing two dozen hats.
Yeah.
So now your job is to help them navigate social media. I think a lot of this gets back to the family unit. Yeah. Like, how do we strengthen the family unit? And it may not be the traditional family unit that we always had, but your grandparents, like your aunts, just whoever your network is, you have to be surrounded about people that want to protect you from these different outlets that are trying to basically.
But some of those people are fans of Brandon and, and then they're teaching that to their kids and they're saying, you know, Tony isn't conservative enough. What do you say to those people who say, and I've seen it on X, a lot of things, you know, a lot of feedback on there, like, you're just not conservative enough. There is a lot of hate out there. What do you say to them?
I think you look at, if I wasn't conservative enough, I often hear this, he votes like a Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. If that was true, why would the Speaker of the House endorse me? Mm-hmm. Why would the leader Scalise endorse me? Why would Dan Patrick endorse me? I mean, those things don't match up, right? You've seen some of these other races here in Texas and some of these other divisions. That division isn't in my race. Why isn't that true? Donald Trump has endorsed me before. Like, some of these things just do not line up. Mm-hmm. May line up in other cases with other races that they try to muddy the water in. The other piece of it too is I focus very hard on just delivering results. Real tangible results for real people. The 50 police officers here in San Antonio that we worked with, the city manager and the mayor and others. I mean, to me, that's real. I met with, we had a lot of police officers that were shot in the line of duty this last year. I met with a half dozen of them the other day and they told me, I walked away. I go, hey, if there's one thing I can do for you, what would that be? They go, can we get police cruisers that have bulletproof windows and bulletproof doors? I didn't know none of our police cruisers have bulletproof windows or bulletproof doors. Mm-hmm. That seemed like a reasonable ask to me. I worked with the police chief. I worked with the president of the San Antonio Police Officers Association, and we are working on that together. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is one example. Vaughn Army, I worked with Rebecca Clay Flores to make sure Vaughn Army has indoor plumbing. Like, I think, like, yes, you can focus on some of these other things, but meanwhile, like, what is my job? My job is to go to Congress and deliver for us real, tangible things that can improve our lives. I think as long as I continue to do that, we'll be just fine.
Do you see Brandon doing that on appropriations, getting funding for the district?
Brandon is a burn it all down type. He just would not deliver anything for us in that manner. Mm-hmm. Nor does he want to. I mean, and besides that, he will embarrass us. I mean, he's not from here. It's very clear he's not from here. Like, we don't talk that way. We don't act that way. We have our differences. We're vocal, but it's not like that.
Before we wrap things up, I wanted to get back to something Greg asked you about the state of the Republican Party. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately about divisions within the party in Congress. You know, I was struck last week by the former president's son, Donald Trump Jr., made a statement where he said the old Republican Party quote unquote no longer exists, and he said MAGA is the Republican Party now. And I'm guessing from conversations we've had, I know that you worked with Marco Rubio, and I'm guessing that during your time in the Navy, that's probably when you started, at least in your mind, started kind of gravitating toward the Republican Party and what it stood for. In the case of Donald Trump, he's the presumptive presidential nominee. His vice president, Mike Pence, has said he won't endorse him. The 2012 Republican presidential and vice presidential nominees, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, don't support him. The 2008 Republican nominee, the late John McCain, strongly disliked him. I think we all know that. The 2000 and 2004 Republican nominee, George W. Bush, doesn't like him. And Bush's vice president, Dick Cheney, has said that Trump is the individual who's the most dangerous individual when it comes to or the biggest threat to the republic in our nation's history. And I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, do you feel, given that these are some of the most prominent people in the party, as I think you started at the time that you were gravitating toward the Republican Party, and they really have separated themselves from the dominant figure in the party now. Do you feel some kind of disconnect? Do you feel some kind of internal conflict? How do you kind of work that all out as a member of the Republican Party in 2024?
Donald Trump is here to stay.
Yeah.
And his MAGA movement is here to stay. And it is real. It is not a flash in the pan. It is not dying out. It is growing and it is thriving. For a lot of different reasons. And there's a reason why I endorsed Donald Trump on day one. I endorsed him November 22nd of 2022. The very first day he announced, I endorsed him. Meanwhile, Brandon Herrera is trashing him, saying he isn't following the Constitution, and he's trashing his son. So there's a very difference there. The way I govern is I govern through the eyes of how do I bring people together? And I think that is under attack. I think the bipartisanism, if you will, I mean, it could be that it's just a presidential year, but it feels deeper than that. It feels as if anytime I work with others, I get punished for it in some form or fashion.
Well, when you hear the people that I mentioned who have criticized him or do not want to support his candidacy, I mean, do you think that they're missing the boat, that they're out of touch, or what do you make of that? How do you reconcile all that?
I think their era is gone and there's a new era that's here, and you have to understand what that era is and what does the future look like. I mean, it's just evident. It's very evident. I mean, you've seen it across the board throughout. And so, you know, how do I make sure that I am, my job is to represent my constituency. Mm-hmm. Not represent me, represent my constituency. And it's a tough constituency to represent.
Yeah.
Because you get pulled, like, once again, it's big, it's fast, opinionated. People want to see you and talk to you and do these different things. So I will continue to navigate it through that lens. But I did a 9-minute interview with George Stephanopoulos where he just grilled me about Trump's endorsement, and I never backed down. I've endorsed Trump on day one, and I believe he will be the next president after this election. And I think the country would be better off for it.
Well, I think we're going to wrap things up on that note. Tony Gonzalez, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Gilbert.
Appreciate it. And for everyone listening in, hope you're doing well, and we'll be back next week. Take care.